Black History Month is upon us once again. Does it still mean the same thing to you that it has always meant? We're going to talk about it on today's Eight Black Hands. There it goes, ladies and gentlemen. It's the big sounding music. When you hear it, you know it's time to get ready for another Sunday night with the Eight Black Hands. We're about to do the thing for real, as we do every week. You are not our friends. You are not our fans. You are our family, and welcome to our living room. Thank you for coming once again. What did you bring? Did you bring anything for the potluck? Oh, you didn't? Okay, well, you still can come
in. Not the potluck.
You still can come in. We still got something for you. It's Black History Month once again, fellas, and I want to jump right in and talk about it. We have on the show in the last couple weeks have been talking a lot about Black studies, Black history, kind of the assault on the Black mind. And here we are, Black history comes again, and I'm just going to state for the record, I'm going to throw it to you all to see if Black History Month, let's just start with the question, does it still mean the same thing to you now that you're older and wiser and operating on a more educated level? Does it mean the same thing to you? I'm not feeling it this year. I'm just not feeling it. I don't feel it's connected to anything having to do with power. So I'm going to put that out in the beginning of the show. What say you, brothers? Does Black History Month still mean the same thing to you? And if so, what does it mean to you? Don't make me cold call, bro. Don't make me cold call.
This dude's always talking about he ain't a teacher. All the lingo. Ish, kick us out, man. Because the reason why I say that is because you just had the dope event yesterday. If you could just talk us through the event and like how that resonated for you.
Yeah, no. So yesterday, for the School District of Philadelphia, we held a birthday party celebration for Rosa Parks, whose birthday was yesterday. And we wanted to use it not only as a way to kick off Black History Month programming that we have, but to center Black joy before we get into the guts of the conversations that need to have. So throughout the month of February, we have a whole program pulled out. And I think of this question, right? Does Black history still mean something? And, you know, as I've gotten older, it's gotten deeper for me. When I learned about Carter G. Woodson, and in fact, I didn't even learn about Carter G. Woodson until I was like 27 years old. And then even learning about his program and why he felt it was important to establish Negro History Week definitely motivates me as I go forward and think of purposeful programming that is open to the community and folks that come through. And so the event we had last night was a reflection of that. It was kind of like the doubling down and the recognition that's very important that not only do we explore the history, that it at times, many times, is very painful to deal with and with trauma that we haven't really reconciled. But at the same time, we need to center joy in stepping into it and the resilience and the fight and the struggle continues. You know, we had pictures of Rosa Parks protesting against apartheid in the 80s. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like she was dedicated for her whole life. And I think that just speaks just to what Carter G. Woodson initially meant for Black History Week, which is to study our history that has been left out.
Yo, thanks for that, bro. That was dope. I actually just saw a picture of Rosa Parks doing yoga, right? Like I was like, yo, let's get it, right? Because like, you know, I think when we talk about Black history, we also got to talk about self-care. As you mentioned it, there's a whole lot of trauma that's associated with just like the lives that we live, unpacking it, and living it every day. And so in order to address those traumas, man, we gotta do some things in terms of taking care of ourselves. So Chris, you said earlier you wasn't feeling Black history. I'm feeling it, but I'm not feeling it, right? So like I'm in the medium right now. Today is Trayvon Martin's birthday. He would have been 28 years old today. So salute the young king, and he should be alive right now, right? So like when we start talking about Black history, we need to start thinking about there's probably somebody that has died every day for the year. If we wanted to like just celebrate the lives of folks that have died for the struggle, right? I don't know that to be true, but I'm putting that out there because I'm just thinking about how much Black death has happened over the years. And so that's and also as a former history teacher, bro, I celebrate Black history every day. 365, 366 during leap year. So this 28 days that folks try to give us, I think that shit is offensive. And I'm taking it into March, into April. That's just the energy that I'm on.
So last year, I wrote something saying I'm not celebrating Black history this year. That was last year in 2022. And I said, I'm officially reclaiming this month as Uncomfortable History Month.
Okay.
Because there were so many laws that were being passed that said nothing should be taught that makes students uncomfortable. And basically those were laws meant to protect white children from hearing things about racism and race and the Black struggle that they didn't want their kids to hear. So they actually wrote it in the law that no child should feel uncomfortable. So I was like, well, I'm going to wild out. We just going to just talk about uncomfortable history. So I told the story of Recy Taylor. And for folks who don't know Recy Taylor, it's a very uncomfortable story. Several white boys interrupted her on the way home from church, threw in her car, kidnapped her, took her to a secret location, did crimes to her, dropped her off in the middle of the street on her way home. They found all of them, rounded them all up, and the attorney for them came to her husband and said, offered him $600 to drop everything. And when he wouldn't take it, he said to him, "Nigga, what do you think she's worth?" As if, you better take this $600 and shut up, right? And then that went through an all-white jury and an all-white court. And you all know how these things work in that era of time. That's an uncomfortable story that gets left out as we're writing happy book reports about Martin Luther King for the 50th year or the 60th year or whatnot. Or the same, you know, did you know dude took a peanut and turned it into a record player? You know, but meanwhile, Recy Taylor's story is not really known. A lot of people don't know that when Recy's story, we only know it because it reached the NAACP. And what a lot of people don't know is when it reached the NAACP, the person picking up that phone was Rosa Parks.
Oh, wow.
You talk about Rosa Parks as the person who didn't want to move her seat. We don't talk about Rosa Parks that the first civil rights movement and action was to stop the mass raping of Black women across the South. That was the first thing that they were taking on before they did all the other stuff. This Recy Taylor story basically started a lot of what they were focused on. We don't tell that story. It's uncomfortable. We don't like it. Yeah. I tell you the story about Mary Turner, who they hung upside down and cut the baby out of her stomach and stomped the baby's head on the ground. Have we ever talked about that story? I think we talked about it once, and the show's uncomfortable. It's something you wouldn't want to tell. You wouldn't want to experience it for sure, but you wouldn't want to tell it when we talk about history. How about this? And I'm going to stop after this. When they put up a sign honoring Mary Turner at the spot where the crime happened, where this woman's husband had been killed the day before, and when she protested her husband being shot and dead, they hung her by her feet, hung her upside down, cut the baby out of her, right? And on the spot, years later, decades later, they put a sign up to mark that spot as a historical marker, and it got shot up with bullets.
That doesn't surprise me.
Got shot up with bullets. You know what else got shot up with bullets? Emmett Till's
grave, yeah.
Right? So this is what we're operating with in the world.
Yeah.
Maybe we should change Black History Month to be Black Power Month, because I'm sick of talking about history. I want to start talking about something that's going to give us some power. What say y'all?
Well,
I don't think that's a bad idea.
and it's real deep you bring that up, because one of my homies, Chris Rogers, shout out Philadelphia, he said a couple years ago to me, he's like, you need to make White Studies Month to study kind of all the nonsense and violence and everything that's going on, because this society doesn't study it, right? But it makes me think your question overall, and even your concern, I think of an Amos Wilson quote. And he's like, the study of history cannot be a mere celebration of those who struggled on our behalf. We must be instructed by history and should transform history into concrete reality, into planning and development, into the construction of power and the ability to ensure our survival as a people. If not, Black History Month becomes an exercise that cuts us off further from reality. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what you're getting to, right? And if you look at Carter G. Woodson's initial intention, people were supposed to study all year round and just present what they found during that week, to have events, to have these things to recognize the studying and inquiry that went down all year round. So the original intention, I would argue, was 365, 24/7. And during the week, we were supposed to uplift it. Now, even Carter G. Woodson, towards the end of his life, recognized that was being changed and watered down and whitewashed. And we need to reclaim that legacy because, quite frankly, we find ourselves in a position where folks don't want this history to be told. And this history, if you really learn it, does give you instruction, does put you in a position where you need to rethink about how you orient yourself in this society and then learn from how our ancestors, how our elders still did, you know, fought and struggled. And those lessons learned, we need to adapt them and learn and how to apply them to nowadays. And quite frankly, we don't do that. I mean, shoot, Carter G. Woodson ain't even mentioned during Black History Month like that.
I don't know that to be true.
I think the history of Black History Month is not widely known. I don't know how to say that, but I think we kind of would say, yeah, we know that. But I think a lot of people are going to Target seeing that whole section of Target. Now, let me, Ray, jump in here, but let me just say this, because I know my Target. I know my Target. Target's a Minnesota company, yeah. And they have this little section of Black History stuff every year, and now they've got, what's my favorite vegan? They got her in there now with the whole line of stuff. Yeah, she's in there. Tabitha. Okay. Tabitha got a whole line in there now. And other Black creators have a line in there now in Target. Yeah. And they keep it in this one section. Now, this is what I can tell y'all. I could go upstairs right now and get you a handful of these beautiful Black Power journals that they had last year. They were Black. They were big. And and if you wait until March 1st, all that stuff will be sitting right there in Target waiting for you with the clearance tag on it because ain't nobody trying to get themselves involved with capitalists.
On March 1st, I'm going in there with my GoPro and
telling you, you will walk away with all the steals. You will have the Black Power mug, you know, whatever. Capitalism is funny. They have to put it up, even in markets, where they know they're not going to sell it and people aren't trying to buy it, right? And it's funny because, listen, if you put up some Encanto stuff with Mexican folks or some Chinese lettering on things or whatnot, the majority population is okay with all that stuff. They'll buy it. They're kind of considered them travelers. But the moment you put the Black stamp on things or whatnot, they just can't see themselves wearing it as like an American thing. Like that's the Black people stuff, right? That's just me talking. It's my commentary. Go ahead, Ray. I know you bought you a shirt from Target. So go ahead, bro.
I didn't buy it. It was gifted. And every year, a Target shirt is gifted to me. And I rock it during the first couple of days of
Black History. You good for it.
Because, you know, that's just who I am. I feel like we need to represent. But to y'all's point, man, it's like, you know, there's the main players that get talked about during Black History. And the reason why I try to steer our history teachers away from talking about MLK is because we're just coming off his birthday. We just celebrated him a couple of weeks ago, right? And so to bring him into Black History Month with everybody else that has been a part of that struggle, been a part of the revolution, right? I just feel like it's not doing him justice, and it's not doing our history justice to just focus on Martin Luther King Jr.
How do you do a massive updating of Black History Month? Like, it feels so tired to me.
Well, that could have been done by the College Board had they had enough courage in order to update it. It had enough courage to update that curriculum the way that it was supposed to be updated. But if you look at the curriculum, and I know El Michelle's in these comments and she's gonna say something slick. But El Michelle,
she's smart. They took out
critical race theory and they took out Black queer studies, Black queer theory. From it as well, and they want to say that DeSantis didn't pressure them into doing it, but they gave them everything he wanted.
I've heard mixed stories on this African American studies deal. If folks go to Education Post, you'll see that we have an interview with Dr. Carr on there, and he was involved in the process. He's not as alarmed as everybody else is. He's not as alarmed as I am. But to your point, Ray, they got rid of Black women, period. Like, it was Kimberly Crenshaw, I want to say Audre Lorde, Bell Hooks, Angela Davis. I could keep going down the list. And I have to wonder about this with so many Black folks involved in the process, if that was a very much a male thing in that, in very much like in civil rights history, period, and civil rights heritage organizations, there was a little bit of considering Angela Davis to be too wacky to sit at the table type of thing. And a lot of other women that were in the movement who were actually doing some of the most radical thinking of everybody. Right. So if it became this thing of, you know, let's do a Booker T. Washington thing, let's work with Capital to create a Black Studies program that would be good for Target. Yeah, you would want to take some of the more radical voices out. And Bell Hooks is hella radical. She's hella so radical, she makes me mad.
sometimes I see some of those Bell Hooks quotes. I just put my head down.
They made me mad, brother. She pissed me off, but I don't want her taken out of the canon.
Right, but yeah, no, not at all. One, because I don't understand enough to feel like I have the ammunition to go like gung ho head first, because I know that, you know, you'll have some Black feminists that will chop your head off if you don't know what you're talking about, right? And so therefore, I linger back. I'm loading my bullets though. Mm. One day I'm gonna be ready.
I'm never getting involved in that fight necessarily, except to say like I am not. As a man, I am not toxic by birth.
Yes.
So if any of your philosophies make me have an original sin from birth, you're done. You can cook it and walk, because it's not going to happen. But I'm here for your liberation, right? Mm-hmm. Everything they took out of there, I'm not Kimberly Crenshaw's biggest fan.
Why not?
She's I'm not opposed to her either. It's just, to me, the story isn't even about how I feel about Kimberly or about Angela Davis or any of them. It's about who has the power to determine what we learn. Right. That's all this is about, power. Yeah. Power. We don't need the College Board. We need power, right? Yeah. We don't need an education reform movement. We need power to determine.
Yeah, man, listen. So we pre-taped the episode of Three Times Dope Podcast, and we talked about this very thing in terms of just like, how we can shift. And so I'm glad that we have our audience now, right? Because like, you know, there's things that you can do, and Ish, back me up on this, or let's argue. There's things that you can do besides the AP course, right? So like, I recommend for folks, if you really want your kids to be exposed to Black Studies, Black History, there's a 3-credit course offered by Syracuse University that allows you to be exposed to Black Studies. You get 3 credits, and that 3 credits will transfer into any school. There's also local community colleges that high schools have partnerships with that align, and you can take an African-American studies course with those community colleges and learn just as much, be just as liberated, take those 3 credits and then transfer them to any college that you're going to. Granted, it won't help you in terms of your weighted GPA, but I think that's cap anyway.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm very biased. Philadelphia, we have a required African American history course.
There it is.
I think that our John's tougher than whatever nonsense that the AP and the College Board is putting out. But even deeper than that, and I know y'all might disagree with me on this, Black history for me is not necessarily American history. It's a different story. It involves much larger tales beyond just America, right? Not just this continent, but folks around the world before a place America was even like fathomed by Europeans. And I think that speaks to what Carji Woodson was talking about, right? And I think when we make the argument, you know, Black history is American history, we're doing a disservice to our ancestors. We're doing a disservice to the diaspora. And the resilience of folks across the world that have been unified and also against each other at times, right? But still, ultimately, Black liberation remains on the mind. And I think when we try to make this a collective situation in America, right? Like, you know, we're all in this together. Like, Black people had to suffer and go through pain in order to get to where we're at today, which, unfortunately, a lot of the narrative of Black History Month has turned into, you know, I don't want to learn about that. Students don't want to learn about that, right? But then the question becomes, how do we create a situation where we're storytelling in a way where folks actually like, yo, Like, I want to be a part of that story. I want to learn more about that story. And it might inform us in which way forward, right? And I think we don't do that when we say it's American history. And I know that's not a popular opinion, y'all. So I'm
I don't think that I think it may be more popular than you think. Chris, you said this as well, because your
biggest, I didn't say that.
No, you okay. said that. Hear what yeah. you said, right? Here, yeah. I'll tell yeah. you what you said.
Okay.
Your biggest critique of the 1619 project was our history didn't start at slavery. And so if you're saying that, you're basically saying what Ish is saying, not that Black history is not a part of American history, but our history doesn't start in the United States.
Let me try and dice that a little bit, okay. because I partially agree. My okay. biggest complaint with the 1619 project, number one, was that it was an idea that was taken from Lerone Bennett's Before the Mayflower. Mm. And if you read Before the Mayflower, it doesn't start in America. It starts with Africans coming to America, right? And it has some prehistory. It has lots of other context. The 1619 project left out a lot of our achievement, and it was a lot of trauma porn. That was my critique of it.
Okay.
I will defend it today, now that the racists have decided to attack it mercilessly and try and outlaw it. I will be like, my measured criticism and critique of it before yeah. is nothing even close to my critique for the racists that are coming after it now.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. Like, so I'll say that. I also said this, if you had one shot to get all of America to understand Black people and where we came from and what we've contributed to this country and all that, would the 1619 project be the one that you would use to do that? Would it be the last word you would want to have if you had one last word? And if you were going to have the New York Times, the biggest billionaire kind of media cult in the world, distribute it for you, is 1619 the story that you would want to tell? Or would you want to tell a different, more powerful story? And I would say the latter. But this is where I disagree with Ish, and you can tell me what you think about this. When Black people came here after 1619, it melted together a lot of people that weren't from the same place in the motherland, couldn't have been more diverse groups. And it took from them everything, their gods, their language, their culture, their music, their way of seeing the world, their philosophies, their understandings. Some were more gentle than the others. Some were more active than the others. Some were taller, some were shorter. It was such diversity on the continent that came into one group of people that were designated as a new people here in the United States, that they literally did start everything from scratch almost. They brought some stuff with them. But if you are alive today and Black and part of Black culture, that was an invented culture of Black people. That is what we made out of the world. The world gave us crap and we turned it into something that is world famous now, right? World famous, right? And all of that was invented here. And this country can't claim a lot of things without us, as a matter of fact, right? So when I say, or you say, or anybody says Black history is American history, it's profound American history. We made America become the America that it said it wanted to be. Without us, there was no conscience. There were a lot of words, a lot of marketing. There was a lot of pursuit of happiness and endowed with inalienable rights granted to them by their creator. Boy, it sounds so, so poetic. It's so beautiful. It was all a lie, but it was so beautiful. It was so poetic. Who made that real in the United States? Black people, right? Bayard Rustin got 250,000 people on the mall with rotary phones, right? Didn't have no Twitter, didn't have any, you know, Instagram, no, 250,000 Black people and white people, by the way, on the mall. We invented that. We invented protest. We invented fighting for your rights. We invented what liberty should really mean and what freedom should really mean. And that's why I say it's American history. It's actually the real American history.
But see, right there, the real American history. And the real American history in mainstream is not that, right? Like, I mean, just like Veggie backing off of what you were saying from begin with, right? Like, you're not feeling it that you should change his name. It's because that when you talk about American history, you're talking about a certain set of ideals and mythologies that formulate our conception of what America is, right? And true, I agree with everything 100%. Like, there wouldn't even be a concept of freedom like that without Black people in America, right? Folks who immigrated in here past like the 1950s, because beforehand they weren't allowed. They have benefited more than arguably Black people have.
Mm-hmm. Arguably,
Black people. Arguably. I'm trying to be political here, bro.
Don't do that. We ain't got to do that.
All right. So, like, they have benefited more than Black people, yeah. And that's consistent. I'm not negating that, but I think we do harm to the mythology we should be developing for our children, for our future, when we tie ourselves to this. And when I say tie ourselves to this, I don't see a grand project that will have a sunny ending when we're talking about America. And mm-hmm. that Black people, like Malcolm X said, Black people be around after America's gone and was here before America existed. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think Black folks need to hold on to that truth. Because once we get lost in the sauce of all this and trying to be and, you know, proving ourselves and going out of our way to prove that, yo, we're just the same as you, we ultimately will get lost in the sauce and probably drink the poison that will destroy us if we ain't careful. Ooh. And Marcus Garvey warned us of that also. So, it's so consistent.
Have you ever been to Africa?
Yeah, 2 years ago, first time, Tanzania. With the fam, man, we caught them checks, and I looked at my wife. He's like, "Yo, we can go to Africa. We can afford that." So we did. I took my four boys, my four sons, and even my dad.
Yeah.
And went to Tanzania and hit up Zanzibar. And I know the East Coast ain't the same as the West Coast. That's what folks tell me. But I think it speaks to kind of like there's a larger desire now to get reconnected. And I don't think that's on accident. I think that's something deeper that folks are feeling now. And let's be, they're saying 40% of the world's population will be in Africa in 2050. Yeah. And believe me, folks who run this show, the world has as it is, they ain't feeling that.
No, not at all. You see, that's why you see Chinese balloons in Montana, but then you also see China, you know, trying to get to Africa. So you already know, right? I'm trying to get there. I'm possibly this year, if not this year, beginning of the next year. And the reason being is because, like, I've talked to friends that have gone, and they're like, it's just like a spiritual transformation.
Mm-hmm.
Once you hit the continent, it's kind of like your body knows your home kind of thing. And I want to experience that, man. So shout out to you for being able to experience that. Did you do Ancestry? Do you know your people came from, like, Tanzania? Are you just went to Tanzania because it was affordable?
Well, we went to Tanzania because we wanted to hit up the East Coast. We wanted to go to Ethiopia, but there was a civil war there. Then we wanted to go to Kenya, and you had to have a yellow fever, like $300 shot. So Tanzania, with the president at the time, they had a really lax COVID draw. Yeah. It was in the middle of COVID. So that's just the circumstances in which we ended up in. But I felt that, and me and my wife felt that. Myself, I've never done the DNA thing because I'm worried about them selling my stuff, but my sister did. And based on my sister's drawing, it's Nigerian. Mostly Nigerian is my African blood, you know. So it's just real interesting. You know, I didn't go to Nigeria, and everybody I talked to from the West Coast of Africa would be like, yeah, I went to Tanzania. Like, oh, no, they're too calm. You need to come out west, you know, to the West Coast of Africa, Ghana, Nigeria. That's where the real folks are. So I'm hoping to get there within the next year or two. And that's my plan.
Is everybody that got the COVID shot got a chip in their arm now?
No, I don't believe that. but I wouldn't be surprised if them bastards are doing something.
If it happened, he wouldn't be surprised. Probably I wouldn't either.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, this conversation about Africa, you know, feels so out of touch for a lot of most of the people I know that go to Africa have some sort of access to means to make that happen, which is a big deal and it's good for them. And I've seen a lot. I fell down the rabbit hole maybe 6 months or a year ago. YouTube has these channels of people that have expats in Africa who have their whole channels, and they tell you about their lifestyle or whatnot. And one of the things that they talk about is how Black Americans coming to Africa bring all of their Americanness with them and come over there acting like colonists in some ways. You want to talk about like gentrification in the United States. There's some black folks from the United States coming to Africa with all their attitudes and everything over there about the Africans, which is real funny. Like it speaks to something that I think is critical to this show, which is the education levels that we have. So much of our education is like pop education. Popular education, even well, what we think. Like that. What's that? Well, okay. Even the attitudes about Africa, even when people consider themselves starting to get enlightened about the continent, still is, you know, Target Walmart level understanding of the continent. And it's something they're doing to live their best life and have self-care and kind of like, you know, unpack and let their hair down out of all the colonism. And then they go over there and they act like colonists over there because they don't know no damn better, right? And the people over there, like, you know, have different kind of ways of interacting with us depending on who we are and how we show up, right? But what do we teach? So I don't blame us for being as ignorant as we are. If we look at what you learn from the time that you are a kindergartner until the time that you are old enough to go to Target and buy the shirt from the thing and then go wear it to some trip to the continent. Between those two poles, that birth and that time that you're going over there and you're doing that, what do you learn? What's in the scope and the sequence? What is in the education for you? If you get right now, we are just talking about outlawing American Black studies.
Yeah.
Right? They don't even get to diasporic education.
Actually, no, in world, they do.
No, they literally don't. I'm talking people graduate in the United States, actually never, Black people graduate in the United States from high school, never gotten to the diaspora. Right?
If you take a world civilizations class, which I think, I know in Baltimore City, you have to take it. You have to take world in sixth grade. You also have to take world in, I think, 11th or 12th grade. And there's a unit on, well, not even a unit. There's a couple of units on like ancient Mesopotamia, ancient Egypt.
There's a unit.
Yeah. you just said scope and sequence. So I'm talking your talk.
There's a unit in 13 years. There's a unit. There's a unit on all of the prehistory that preordains everything that we live in now.
Yeah, but if you're a black teacher, then you know even if you have a surface level surface level access to that, you are going to assign research. You're going to assign your students to do research to do more in depth studies about it. If you're a good black studies teacher,
if you're a conscious black teacher, and we have a lot of those.
And I just gotta say something about that. Like,
I'm cynical as hell. If y'all can't hear it,
no, I feel you because I'm cynical as hell. I mean, like, I'm a pessimist when it comes to this. But like, we also gotta remember, Africans have been through colonial education. I've been talking to this one sister from Nigeria. She's like, Nigerians weren't even allowed to really talk about history or anti-colonial theory. They still aren't. So like, I think we take for granted kind of like what type of education folks are having over in the continent in different countries, right? And that's why I'm a strong believer that Africana studies can save the world, man. I've written several things about that, right? Because the ideas and theories and the worldview that we can attach to, not only to ancient Kemet, but that we can learn from our recent ancestors, can give us the tools, the analytical tools necessary to really like rethink how we orient ourselves to the world. And I think Africans, and I think folks in the Caribbean, everybody, we can all benefit from those theories. You know what I mean? Like, folks in Africa don't learn about Frantz Fanon or Albert Memmi or all the other folks that wrote extensively about anti-colonial struggle, because that is dangerous. It's subversive. Mm-hmm. The same reason they don't want us to teach our children that. And let's be honest, for most of our history and now, that has not been taught. We're talking about like 30 years when that's even allowed, and half the folks don't even know what they're talking about. So, I mean, like, I am under no illusion that a lot of folks have a lot of unlearning to do. And also, we need to be very clear, like, we were indoctrinated. Mm-hmm. We are unlearning still a lot of the nonsense that is pushed upon us, man. I just got over that 2 years ago on some tip. Yeah.
Some of us that choose to. A lot of us don't choose to unlearn this shit, and we acclimate. towards the what is white is right mentality in order for us to live the lifestyles that we feel as if are owed to us. And that's problematic.
I keep learning things that I didn't know, right? That are today, that are not like history. So I keep learning about the way that the continent is still being raped. Like I used to be taught in a way which, you know, it was like, it was bad. And then countries got their independence, Africa. Yeah. And then countries got their independence one by one. And then some stuff happened. Who knows? Like what after that? Right.
Yeah.
But some stuff is like France is still charging money and keeping entire nations on its franc. Right.
Look what we're doing to Haiti.
Yeah. Haiti is another good example. People are still paying their oppressors, like oppressor aid, like France wouldn't exist without the fact that it still is colonizing African nations. It still has, it's getting some, all of these nations are getting some of their resources still supplied by people that supposedly are poor. Yeah. Like nations that are supposedly can't feed themselves, but yet we're getting all of their stuff to make cell phones, all of their gold, their diamonds, all this other stuff. I saw a thing the other day that said, it was like, science has now come to the part where we can actually grow diamonds in labs that are actually better than the real thing, that are actually clearer and of a higher quality. But the whole purpose of the value of diamonds is that they come from suffering. So people don't want the lab grown ones because they don't have the suffering involved with them. Like
that's wild, bro.
Isn't it? Like, you know, look down at your wedding ring tonight. Would you have been okay with that if it grew in a lab, if it wasn't dug up by an 11-year-old in Africa? Would you be okay with it? Right. Like if we could just stop the 11-year-olds from digging up your cell phone minerals, you know, and all that, and getting France peanut butter. France has a whole African nation that is dedicated just to providing them peanuts for their peanut butter. And it's a nation that can't feed itself. Right. Oh,
so what I learned in school, I learned that Africa was the only continent that could feed itself. So like it was the only so when we learned about exports, imports, and I learned, you know, all those ideologies in terms of like how much the United States has to export and how much they have to bring in terms of importing. I was taught that Africa is the only country before it was robbed of its resources that could self-sustain. Mm. So,
and that's why they had to enslave it. And that's why they had to enslave us, because they hated the originators of the human race. They actually wanted to branch off and become a new franchise, right? In this way, they're Ice Cube, right? They had to leave the group, right?
Oh, no, you don't. America's most.
They had to leave the group. Listen, I never do want to have a conversation like this without coming back to my main question and all these questions. What should we be teaching our young people? We just said a lot of cynical stuff. I feel like we're just year after year going to keep retreading the same stories to young people. And it's not going to make a connection between the historic past. We could talk about Marcus Garvey, but what's that got to do with today for real? I mean, honestly, for real, what does that, like, one more telling of that for another year? For what purpose? To what end? What does it do? Ish, you the teacher, tell me.
No, I mean, this is a real question. I'm actually one of my colleagues who I just brought in to work with us on the social studies tip. She even said to me, we can focus on all these things, but being down in the press, nobody wants to hear that. Like, we can wax philosophic about these things and like talk in circles like you're saying, but we're not talking to our people. And I'm wrestling with that right now because like, even when we think about Juneteenth, like I was all talking smack and like, oh, you know, we celebrating a holiday that, you know, white folks came and told the enslaved that they free now. Like, what kind of holiday is that? And then she challenged me. She's like, well, what about what Black folks did with that holiday afterwards? And that, I mean, like, I'm still trying to reconcile that right now. And I don't know if anybody's familiar with the philosopher Sylvia Winter. But Sylvia Winter talks about kind of the mythos that people tell themselves about themselves, whether real or not. But those stories that we believe to be true influence the way we function right? What we tell our children, what we focus on telling our children, what we value. Mm-hmm. And we need to be very purposeful with that. But at the same time, I'm very knowledgeable. Like, I used to teach children the horror stories all the time. And I remember this one student said to me, he's like, Gymnast, man, like, why do we spend so much time talking about slavery? I don't want to hear about this. And I was like, you know what? You're right, man. And I don't have the answer.
You know what? They don't want broccoli either, though, bro.
And see, this is you're arguing with, like, right. This is my argument myself.
Yeah. This ain't about what you like, you know, like when we used to say stuff like, I can remember adults saying, there ain't nothing wrong with wanting. Ain't nothing wrong with wanting. I want this. I want McDonald's. Ain't nothing wrong with wanting. If by McDonald's you mean this chicken fricassee, that's what you having tonight. These smothered onions and pork chops, that's what you having tonight. Well, listen, we put out a call to our friends and family and fam to say, like, if this was a viewer choice show, what would you want us to talk about tonight? And we got a few things in. One of them, I'm going to see if I can pull it up here. One of them is kind of, to me, frankly, kind of hilarious, but I don't know what to make of it. So, So, El Michelle, Laura, thank you very much. Miami Police unveil a new cruiser in honor of Black History Month. They didn't wrap this police cruiser in the continent, kente cloth, and all kinds of other stuff going on here. Brothers, what say you about this here madness?
Bro, I'll take this on, right? Because, like, I was talking to my family about this, man, and I'm sitting and I'm thinking to myself of, so first of all, there's a lot of lived trauma in terms of Black men or just Black people in general, people of color being pulled over by police officers, right? I know for me, instantly my blood pressure spikes up, right? I become nervous. I become, you know, all of the signs that if a police is looking at me, it is now I'm looking suspicious, right? Mm-hmm. And I may be looking suspicious to them, but to me, and I'm gonna be vulnerable right now, I'm scared as hell. I'm scared for my life right now, right? So I immediately put my hands on the dash and do all of the things that we're taught to do in terms of being able to make it home to our family, right? And so I'm just sitting there thinking to myself, because, you know, even though we don't like to talk about this, the likelihood of you losing your life by the police is a reality, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm sitting and I'm thinking to myself, if I get pulled over by this cop, this white cop, and this truck right here, and this car right here, and I die by the hands of this, wrapped in this, man, I'm coming back to hunt somebody.
Ish, what do you say about this? Because this feels like a weird damned if you do, damned if you don't. You know, what they're probably going to say is, we tried something. Like, you know, we tried with you people. We tried to give you something. And we just can't do nothing because now there's backlash about this car.
I mean, for lack of a better metaphor, man, this is putting lipstick on a pig. And
disavow.
You know, like, when we even, I mean, come on, man. It's ridiculous. I mean, it's offensive, but that just shows the tone deafness. And I bet you some brother up in that office co-signed this. Like, right. Yeah, like, we're going to be da-da. I'm like, yo, this is not good. And I think it just shows the lack of, like, knowledge, the superficialness that is put on this, on Black History Month, which probably causes you to be like, nah, I ain't messing with that no more. And probably turns to the kids when they roll their eyes and be like, oh, I'm tired of hearing about slavery. I'm tired of hearing about Harriet Tubman. I'm tired of hearing about Martin Luther King, because we're doing the same stories over and over again. And those stories are fitting into this narrative that Black people's pain and suffering somehow made this world better. And that might be true, but the way that story is told, and you put lipstick on a pig and say, well, look, we're trying to reach out to the community with the Rastafarian colors at that, but I ain't going to talk about that. It's just disrespectful.
I will say this, and then we can move on, because this was hilarious to me when I first saw it. I just thought it was a joke. I thought this was like a skit, and someone was punking me. Because first of all, Miami, what don't get me on a rant. Miami's not my favorite place. Florida's not my favorite place. This is, you know, stand your ground and all of that. This is where you can have a man who can kill a 17-year-old and then go on to, like, try and auction off the gun that he did it with and try and raise money for himself off of that, whatnot. And then you can have people actually for that 17-year-old try and indict him for his own murder after he's dead. Like, you know, oh, maybe he shouldn't have been wearing a hoodie. You know, well, maybe you shouldn't breathe. Right. Like, just shut up. Right. Like, so anyways, damned if you do, do that, damned if you don't. I'm going to take a slightly alternative opinion here just to say this. If the police department has somebody in it who is pushing for this and pushing for them to, like, do better and to show, like, the community some show of solidarity and we're here with you and we understand and blah, 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 whatever. Yeah. And they created this as a plan. And then some other group fought against it and said, why are the police going woke? Or whatever, we would show up for it then, I think. Then we would be like, oh, no, we like the police cruiser with the Rastafari continent stuff all over it. We love that, right?
I don't know that to be true.
I don't know that to be true either.
I think, wouldn't, but I would. I'm just going with it myself.
So here's the thing, though, right? Like, so clearly, you had to have somebody black at the table to sign off on this idea. To say, you know what, this may be a good idea, right? Which means that you have a seat at the table in order to push ideas that could move the work forward. You just choose not to. You choose to do dumb shit with the power that you have. And so now, how do we now have conversations with folks that have the seats at those tables in order to get them to kind of reinvent or reimagine what that power looks like and how they can use that power? That's the question.
You're getting a little too soon because you're just getting all fancy with the words and everything. I see you, bruh. He's writing a dissertation, folks, so, you know, it's going to come out at times. Anyways, Nicole sent us a message asking, are we in a state of fascism? And specifically, she called out the new college takeover in Florida, where the governor, Ron DeSantis, in Florida has targeted a liberal arts college that has historically been known to be open to all kinds of people and to be a safe haven for college goers that want to go to school in a place where they can be affirmed for who they are, whatever. And it's been that way, I believe, since the 70s. And Ron DeSantis actually took over the entire board of that school. Implanted two board members that are crazy as board members to add. Christopher Rufo, who is nationally known as the architect of the CRT panic, and the president of Hillsdale College. He put the two of them on the board of this liberal arts college. And they immediately fired everybody. So they're going to take a college that has a history of teaching one way, and they're going to implant nothing but conservative people. Nicole asked, are we in the middle of a, what'd she say? How she put it? Are we in a state of fascism?
In Florida.
And Oklahoma and Texas and Iowa. I mean, people are starting to compete with Florida.
Let me tell you something. The best thing that could have happened that I saw this past week, some of the best news that I saw was when the Democrats moved their caucus from Iowa to South Carolina. I was so filled with joy when they did it. Mm-hmm. I was so filled with joy when they did that because, you know, when you think about Democrats in Iowa, they don't represent the nation, right? That's not the look of the nation in terms of, like, you know, when you look at the caucus. And so for them to take those steps in order to make that move, that symbolized change for me. And so even though you guys, well, Chris, you're not you. Ish, I don't know if you're a Dem. If you are, then you. Reef is definitely a Dem.
They're not. He's not a Dem.
He's a Dem.
Reef
shows up like a Democrat.
Oh, well, so do you, but you claim Republicanism. So yeah, Reef is independent.
My voter card says Raid of Republican.
Reef is like me. We both independent of these damn systems. Wait, but so to answer, what's that? What?
You independent now?
What do you mean? I've always been independent, bro.
No,
what
are you, sir. You were Jesse Ventura.
No. I'm a libertarian.
Yeah.
But when it comes down to party affiliation, I'm for sure not a Democrat or a Republican. Like, the whole duopoly thing, like, is always ridiculous to me. As a matter of fact, I'm registered with the Green Party. So I'm a registered. Get your mind around all this, whatever, if you want. Like, get your mind around all that. But going back to Nicole's point, We use words like authoritarianism and fascism, and we throw those words around. And I think it's really important as educated people to say whether or not it is true, whether or not this is, are we entering a authoritarian state? Are we entering a fascist state? And I would say that most people would poo-poo that idea. They would like want to, oh, you're just being too whatever. And those would be the same people who didn't recognize the Holocaust as it was starting to happen. Those would be the same people working in the system who were arranging the trains and didn't even know where the trains were going and what they were going to do, but they were bureaucrats working within the system. And they, in their mind, they never thought it could happen. Like they never. So what clues do you need, man? Like they're banning books. They're pulling authors out. They're taking out entire thought systems out of colleges. They're replacing college personnel with non-tenured faculty to radically redo and limit and restrict what can be learned and what can be taught. They're going after educators. They're going after gay people. They're going after everything damn near except for gypsies, right? The only thing that is left is, I mean, they're going after Negroes and immigrants and whatever. The only people, once they say gypsy, I'm moving. The moment I hear anybody start raising-
Where are you moving to?
Bro, I live in South Canada right now. I'm going to go across that border. I'm telling you right now.
It feels like a good option.
And that's why I want to stay this far north, because I'll need to be able to walk there if I had to. I need to be able to get to Canada, because what signs do we need where we would say, okay, maybe not, but we can't poo-poo the whole thing. We can't just, you know, I don't know. Issue. What would you say? Because you share some of my cynicism, not all of it, but some of it.
No, I'm definitely am. And on the Dem question, in Pennsylvania, we have closed primaries. So, yes, I am registered a Democrat.
Oh, my God.
We have closed primaries, man. Come on. Now, with that being said, I would say that America has historically has been default towards fascism. There's no coincidence that Hitler even talks about modeling some of what he did off of our apartheid system.
That's right.
And don't get it twisted, man. Fanta soda was created by Coca-Cola so they can continue selling soda to the Nazis.
That is after so crazy.
They declared war on us. So, like, all this, like, this, that, America supported apartheid in South Africa up and almost all the way up until the end, man. Rosa Parks is seen protesting against that in the 80s. Ella Baker, you know? So, like, Black people are the only people in this country consistently that have fought against fascism. And the tendency of this country to be like that. I mean, you can look at what happened during World War I. They had people who were just like deputized that ran up in people's houses and beat the crap out of them because they might be organizing. And I'm talking about beating up their own folk. So, like, this has just been a consistent pattern within this society. And when people claim fascism is here and all this, I'm just like, yo, the only reason that it isn't full blast is because people have been pushing back on this hard, blood, sweat, and tears on this. So I agree with you 100%. But at the same time, it's like we can't lose sight that as soon as Black folks lose their mind in this country or try to be and forget all this, then we all doomed.
I mean, you just said a lot, right? And I agree with all of it, except for the Democrat part. That's kind of whack. But the rest of what you said was so dope. I think it was just a couple of days ago I saw a story that said that there are groups of folks that have deputized themselves in Florida who are going into schools and checking kids' lockers and school bags to make sure that they don't have any unauthorized books that don't fall on Florida's safe list, right? Could you imagine being a father or a mother, a parent, who isn't crazy and part of the neo-Nazi party that is now taking hold in states? Could you imagine having somebody come home and having your kids say that there were these groups of men, armed men, show up called the Proud Boys and others who were looking through lockers and book bags to make sure that they didn't have any books that were unauthorized?
I lose my mind.
I was about to say. what would you do, bro? I mean, like couldn't you imagine like what kind of problem this is going to cause at some point? They're going to catch the wrong one, right? And then it's going to be a problem because you done caught the wrong one. Because y'all like to cosplay this shit on the weekends, but you're gonna catch the wrong one. Let me get to another viewer's choices. I know we're running towards the end here. Tanae, who actually has just had a long trip to
the
mother. I believe she might be back, but she just spent a lot of time over there. She was chronicling her time while she was there, and I was living vicariously through her as a person who can, you know, like, please, people, if you can go somewhere like this, film it a little bit for those of us that are going to be trapped here at home. Put it on your Facebook like this. But anyways, Tanae talked about two different things. I think we covered one of them. She said, this year I'm focusing on cross-content connections. How have we lived, thrived, built community, resisted, loved, etc. across the diaspora? I've been posting my learnings on IG. Yes, she has. And I've been following in Facebook and look forward to using this information when I get back into the classroom. And I think we covered that a little bit about the fact that we're not doing enough of getting to the diaspora with our people. We're getting caught up in the Rosa Parks story and the 80th retelling of Malcolm X. And, you know, he had this big transformation and went to Mecca and, you know, the I Have a Dream speech and that stuff. But we're never getting back to France is still raping Africa, right? We don't get that far because, you know, we have a very juvenile kind of scope and sequence. So I get what she's saying about that. But she also had something about financial literacy. Our financial literacy programs really preparing us to be financially literate and compete in a global market. How are they being taught? How are the young people being taught to invest in real time? And I don't know about this one. What say y'all who do school stuff? Because I think it's very important, right? Yeah. But there's also 80 things that schools are trying to teach already and not doing a great job with all of them.
Yeah, I think when schools took civics away, it was a travesty. And so you do see some people that are making this push in order to put financial literacy at the forefront, like kids shouldn't be able to graduate without being able to balance a checkbook, things of that nature. I just saw an ad from Five Guys. I posted it on Twitter. Five Guys is paying $17.65 an hour to a high school graduate. That equates to about $37,000 a year for a high school graduate if you're working 40 hours a week. And so I'm thinking about if I graduated in 1995, if I had the opportunity to make $17.65 an hour, bro, I would have never went to college. That's a lot of bread right there coming out for a high school kid.
Well, first of all, it's not a lot. Is it? Well, it's a lot for a high school kid, I guess.
That's a lot of money.
But it's not something to skip college for.
Well, I guess I would have slow walked college. Yeah,
I'm glad you went to college, bro. I'm glad you went to college and then go to McDonald's for $20 an hour. Because pretty soon that's gonna be robots. They already tested in Japan, they're already testing these machines that make fully formed burgers. And you can, like, vending machines, you come right up to them and they fry it in the machine. So that's coming. I think there's something to graduating after being in a place for 13 years and not knowing how to calculate interest on a mortgage loan, not knowing whether a car loan is a good deal or a bad deal, or not knowing whether Rent-A-Center is completely ganking you.
Terrible.
Right? Like, oh my God. Like, and I did the Rent-A-Center thing. I did
three
it.
Of those TVs. Three. You're paying for three of those TVs.
Bruh, in my lifetime, I did Rent-A-Center. I did the payday loans. I was unbanked, so I had to do all the means to get your check cashed on a Friday before you got home, whatever. Friday night, just got paid. You know what it's like to miss the bank, you know, at the end of that Friday with your check in hand and then spend a whole week looking at it, like eating ramen, looking at it.
Ramen is a delicatessen now, you know.
Bro, no, it's not. And just stop it. Just stop it. It's not. And you know what? There's a whole video on what ramen does to your body as you eat it. And it's not good. It's terrible for you. But if you can't get your check cashed, you pay outrageous fees to get your check cashed, right? To get your money. It's expensive to be poor. So we should be teaching something, and maybe it doesn't have to happen in schools, some sort of financial defense. We need to teach intellectual defense. We need to teach financial defense. Like, you're about to go out in the world and have a whole bunch of people trying to take everything from you when you get that first little job and that second little job. For young people, when they first get that first check, it's my favorite thing ever. When they're like, "What's FICA? I don't want no FICA." they get a check, they know how much they make, and they think that their dollar per hour is going to equal how many hours they worked. And when they see they get that check that's supposed to be $125 and that check is $78.
Hey, put El Michelle's tweet up right now. She just tweeted something, right? Hey,
what did El Michelle say? El Michelle says, my college student is making the equivalent of $75 an hour to write content. $17 per hour is nothing today, and kids know it. I would say that depends on what class you are in.
Bro, tell me you Jack and Jill without telling me you Jack and Jill.
I mean, listen, I don't know about all that. I'm just going to say that, you know, I saw somebody today post something that said that that unions built the middle class and the middle class built America.
That's bullshit.
And I laughed because I was like, so where was the working class when the middle class was doing all that magic? What was the working class?
People will say anything out of their mouth,
right? Though. So the middle class has a orientation to what money looks like in the world, and the working class has one, and the underclass has a really radically different one, right? Yeah. Like, I have a TikTok person that I follow who I'm fascinated with, who does whole meals from the Dollar General, right?
Really?
Does whole meals? Like, she did a whole Thanksgiving meal for like $19 or something. It was like crazy, and had Elfie? A whole huh?
Elfie.
Well, shut up, bro. See, that's middle class shit you be bringing into these conversations now. Why you had to add that part, Mr. Peloton? Why you gonna add that part? Healthy. Bro, listen, at a certain point, Dollar General is what you got. You got to figure out how you're gonna make it last. So, well, listen, fellas, this has been exciting as always to me to see y'all, brothers, at the end of the week. It helps me keep myself sane, and the people in the comments that come and, you know, like, interact with us around these things. The reason I say it's like family every week to me, and being like fam, is like we're not safe to say everything and talk about everything all the time in all of our settings. And I feel like when we come together this way, even some people in the comments are free to let their hair down and kind of just speak plainly.
Right.
Yeah, so, you know, especially those that, y'all that write dissertations and stuff, like to talk real fancy sometimes, right? You know, hey, you know, Pelotons and everything. But so, you
as
know,
y'all going into y'all's final thoughts, I'm yielding my time to Beyonce.
Okay, see, I don't even know what that means, and I don't care.
Except the Grammys are on, and I'm trying to get upstairs.
Okay. All right, well, we're going to do a quick round of final thoughts on Black History Month and any of the things from viewer choice that came from viewer choice this week. So let's start with you, Ray, since you know you're shorting it and you're gonna be shortened.
Yeah. So my final thoughts are to living people that are making living Black history, right? So I'm gonna shout out Reef. Reef is doing this thing with the center. Reef is the center of conversation with regards to our improvement for Black teachers, nationwide, and not just Black teachers, Black leaders, and anybody that he comes in contact with. He's out here doing his thing. He's bossing up. He's taking that challenge by the horns, and I appreciate him. So to the living legend, Reef, shout out to him.
Word. Ish?
Yeah, no, I just got to snap that up. I agree 100%. Sharif definitely is doing that work. I want to highlight this idea of the story that we tell ourselves, what we emphasize. It's important, right? And I feel like folks have collectively dropped the ball over the last couple decades. It used to be by default knowledge not to trust this, and that you have to work twice as hard, while at the same time you need to recognize the history that created the circumstances. So I think that folks need to reach back and learn from that. You know, some race first needs to happen. And I'm afraid that we're getting lost in the story of America, rather than the Black story, which made America. And I just want to say, emphasize that. And folks who have never, who want to learn more about kind of like Eurocentric kind of framing of our societies, I suggest Dr. Memora Ani's Yorugu. Reading that book opened my mind up to thinking of how this world could be differently. And we need to engage in that freedom dreaming. Because right now, man, I don't see nothing that much that's positive for our folks happening. besides having a nice car and a big house. And ultimately, if that's the goal, I don't want to be part of that program.
No, I don't mind a big house. I do not mind a nice car. I don't like payments. And I've never been a fan of payments. So that's my only problem. I love nice cars. I just hate payments. And I love big houses, which is why I live so far out that there's deer walking through my yard at all days. Deer, wild turkeys. I've seen a coyote. I think it was a coyote. My wife doesn't think it was a coyote. All kinds of stuff out here when you get far enough out. This is why you don't invite Sharif places, though, because he'd be killing all of that. So.
He's coming with the boy now.
Yeah, he's coming out here with because that country nonsense. I'm going to let Dara Star Tucker get the last word here. Can y'all give me the thumbs up if you can hear this when it starts? I want to play this for everybody because this gets at the heart of something we were talking about at the beginning of the show about the inventiveness of Black folks who invented Black culture after losing a lot of contact with the diaspora. So here we go.
Why does Black pride come off as... But white pride comes off as... Just a good old boy. Never meaning no harm. This is Dara Star Tucker, and this is The Breakdown. Black and white pride come off very differently in the U.S. because of the way that race and culture developed here. See, the concept of race is a colonial construct. It's a theory based on pseudoscience that was developed to create a hierarchy to group people by skin color. The theory of race falsely claims that people who come from sub-Saharan Africa are at the bottom of the pyramid in terms of intelligence, desirability, and overall worth. It made them subhuman. The lighter your skin was, the more valuable and entitled you were. It's all made up, since the concept of race is not attached to any legitimate biological or scientific truths. Race is not real. But racism is. Black people were brought to the United States in chains from countries all over the continent of Africa, like Nigeria, Ghana, the Congo, and the Ivory Coast, with their own unique ethnicities, traditions, and cultures. But when they hit U.S. shores, they were simply called Negroes, and their cultures were stripped away. The people with white skin who migrated from countries like England, Germany, Netherlands, and Spain, Caucasians, brought their cultures with them. So colonial powers cut Black people off from the rest of American society. They weren't allowed to attend school, they had to develop their own worship services and their own social framework, but they were also cut off from their cultures of origin. They weren't allowed to practice their religions or speak their languages of origin, and their social customs from their homeland started to fade over time. So what do you think they did? They began to develop a distinct culture of their own. This is what's known as Black American culture. Blackness in the U.S. is not just a color or a racial grouping based on pseudoscience. It's a culture. It represents triumph in the face of extreme adversity. It's something to take pride in. If you're a white person in the U.S., you can probably trace your ancestry back through many generations. Descendants of enslaved people usually can't do this. Records generally were not kept of marriages of enslaved people if they were allowed to marry at all. It was illegal for them to learn how to read and write, so they weren't able to pass down any of their own family histories or customs. Southern pride can often be a stand-in for toxic masculinity, racism, and the fear of outsiders. So much of it was born of the need to marginalize, oppress, and harm non-white people that it can carry an earned stigma in the minds of so many people. And so much of mainstream American culture has descended into gross consumerism. Many Americans would be hard-pressed to define what their culture is outside of Walmart, Applebee's, and megachurches. In short, Black pride developed out of the need to overcome horrific circumstances. Black culture was born out of triumph in the face of isolation, hardship, and persecution. It's pride that's tied to achievement. Things like Irish pride, Italian pride, Scottish pride, they're attached to culture and should be celebrated as well. But white pride? Well, that's simply a celebration that you were born at the top of a phony racial pyramid. And it carries all of the ugly baggage that comes with that. Many people attempt to... What is Black pride?
She's trying to say it twice. I love that clip just because it answers this question about, you know, Black culture or white culture. And when I think about Black History Month and what we're teaching young people, first of all, I think we need to teach more like that fast clips of getting through a lot of information quickly and faster. And two, just being straight to the point on some of these things, there is a difference between Black pride and white pride and the origins of them and what we have contributed. And maybe we should replace Black History Month with Black Power Month so that we could you know, gain some power in this country where we don't have stuff.
A black power conference next year. Eight black hands, black power conference.
Woo! All four of the people are going to attend that one. Everybody else is going to be asking, what kind of food y'all going to have? Well, anyways, listen, first of all, thank you, fellas, for indulging me with that long clip at the end here. I think actually it teaches a lot in a short amount of time. I don't want more of that for our young folks. It's got like 1.4 million views, and she gets a lot of views because she breaks stuff down quickly within 3 minutes or so, and I love it. I think we need to be teaching this way more. This has been another episode of the Eight Black Hands. We covered this week some of the viewers' choice topics, and we also covered Black History Month. But next week, we're going to have a very special guest for you all. I'm not going to tell you who it is yet, but be watching our channels. Watch the Facebook and the Twitter for Eight Black Hands, and you'll see the guest will be announced this week. And as always, we appreciate you giving us some of your time on a Sunday night to talk about the 8 million Black kids in the United States who are not getting all that they need to reach their highest potential. It's been another episode of 8 Black Hands. We are out.